Elika, welcome back to Siyakhuluma Podcast and episode 2 for your book. How are you today?
Thank you very much for having me. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Yes, I'm happy to see you again here, to hear you on the podcast. Now, I think we're all excited that the book is not far away to be published. Like, we're talking about weeks and some couple of days, something like that.
Yeah, it's going to be published on the 30th of September, and the launch is taking place in Glasgow.
Yeah. Where in Glasgow, for example?
It's a bookstore called Good Press Gallery in St. Andrew's Street, 32 St. Andrew's Street. It will be on the 30th of September at 6:30 p.m.
Oh, nice. I'm going to be there. I think it's very exciting. I'm excited, so okay. I can't wait.
Thank you.
I've been thinking about this because, since it was the first episode, I just want to catch up this. What was the challenges for you during the process of this book?
So the challenges, that's a very good question, actually. So I was actually just recently talking to somebody else who has worked as a volunteer in and around Moria Camp. And it's really interesting because there's this immediate like recognition when you talk to someone who's been there. And we were just talking about how there's really, when you're there, there's really no time to just sit and reflect on what is happening because everything is just so fast paced and it becomes a sort of routinized way of life, basically. And when I wrote this book, I was in lockdown elsewhere. I was not in Greece. And that's when I started to think about the book and reflect on it and, you know, thinking about how to structure it. And that's when I sort of started to just put everything into perspective for the first time. That was in 2020. I'd been working in Moria since 2018. That's when I started to really think about the whole picture and think about how I had become just, it had become, in another sense of the word, normalized for me to work in that context. But when you step away from it, you realize actually how abnormal it is, you know, how everything, every like circumstance, the working conditions, the living conditions, the everything there is far from normal. But when you are there for so long, it sort of becomes normalized. And that's a problem. Because once you step away and you start really thinking about it, you realize like the psychological impact that it's slowly having on you, you know. So the challenge, I guess, for me was to give myself this time to sit and think about it and then just sort of realize and put things into perspective in the way that I did. The book for me, in a way, was therapeutic because it gave me that space to come to terms with everything that had happened and everything I was witnessing, whereas I didn't have that time or space while I was working there. So the book gave me this chance to basically reflect on the things that needed to be reflected on.
Oh, great. I know you touched something about psychological effects. So what was the coping mechanism you have? I can imagine during the lockdown, plus the experience went through this when you're volunteering on the more. Yeah, can you just take us there a bit?
Yeah, so for me, like, even though, as I said, everything was always happening so fast, and it always does in such contexts. So especially in like hotspots and refugee camps where it's the first point of arrival for people where they don't have their basic needs, everything needs to happen really fast all the time. So you get into that pace. It's quite riddled with adrenaline, that kind of job. And there's only so much like time that you can sort of keep going at the same pace before you sort of shut down and need to step away and, you know, need to take a breath. For me, while I was working there, I tried to keep a journal, and that helped also in my later writing process. It helps sort of it reminded me of how emotional certain experiences had been. And I have some of those experiences in the book, specific Like there is a little girl, for example, who one of the first fires there was in Moria, who sort of rescues her little brother from a caravan. And this we she was a patient of ours. She was no more than 8 or 9 years old. And this I've included in the book. And I remembered how emotional it was to hear that story through the journal entry that I wrote that day. So keeping a journal really helped me come to terms with some of the more emotional things that I was hearing and seeing. As a humanitarian worker, it had a huge psychological impact on me. As I also mentioned in the book, I've mentioned in the past, I wrote myself in as a character in that book. And to the point that I became very depressed working there. And at the time, I couldn't understand why I had become so depressed, because it was gradually just a degrading process. It was not just the context, it was also personal issues that I was having, but the context was making it like tenfold worse. So at the time, I sort of made myself go to these yoga meditation classes, and that really, really helped me. It just really grounded me and centered me, and I fell in love with yoga at that time. And it just gradually, it went from being a sort of my means to an antidepressant to it became my passion. It became something that I've tried to integrate into everyday life. I later went on and did my yoga teacher training after that. I taught some kids yoga in Lesbos, back in Greece. I've tried to teach some here as well, some yoga. So it became really a means, sort of, not just to cope, but really to understand and to ground myself in present day reality.
So, if I can ask you, do you have any really best chapter on this book that you can recommend, or your favorite? I know it's hard when you're writing, but sometimes I'm not a good writer, but when I write something, I'm like, I really enjoy. I don't know, not enjoy, but I have this very good what's it called? Sensation of this is really, I want this out. I know, I think just something you wrote there. You think that. Not, and I don't know how to put it properly, but I think people just to get excited to get this book.
Well, as I mentioned, like the book, it's five characters. So we've got a single mother, we've got a man who falls in love, we've got a humanitarian worker, we've got a little girl, and we've got an unaccompanied minor. So the chapters with the little girl, whose name is Fereshte, those are my favorites, because I really enjoyed writing from the perspective of a kid. And it's just, not an unaccompanied minor, also a kid, but slightly older. I just really enjoyed that perspective, because she's a child, and she is based on a girl that I knew. She's a child, but she still has that sense of responsibility. As the older child in the family, this need to help her mother. To be there for her little brother. So I really enjoyed writing those chapters. So you've got her chapters dispersed throughout the entire book. And actually, the book ends with one of her chapters.
That's great. So do you have any specific audience on this book coming? Or is it just for everyone?
I mean, for me, look, it's gonna appeal more to people that have some sort of knowledge about the camp or have been there. So I've seen it with the crowdfunding campaign. People who volunteered there were very willing to contribute to the campaign and to share and to get the word out there. So it appeals more to them, but I would say they are as keen as myself to get the word out there, because they were there. So they are as keen for the rest of the world to know what happened there, who wasn't there. So I would say, for me, ideally, it would be to raise awareness about this, because, as I said previously, like doing an article on it or shooting like one reportage on it, it's not enough to actually understand what it was like for these people to live there for months up to years, to squander so much of their time living in these conditions and becoming gradually hopeless. This was never captured in any media that I came across.
So when you're writing, I'm just curious about, do they ever like mention the government, for example, like the Greek or the European human rights and stuff? Because sound like it's not just a camp, just a camp that, which means the government knows about it, but do they get involved to help or something? Or is there anything in that book, maybe? I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure I never I don't hold back in any way, but I mean, obviously the government is aware. I mean, it's run by the government. They're responsible for it. The EU funds Greece to in order to, the some funding to be put into the upkeep of these camps. And of course, that's not enough. You can't just throw funding at a problem and expect it to go away. But they've been doing this for as long as we can remember. So for sure, it's known that it is the government's responsibility. The fact that there are so many NGOs there helping out also showed that the government can't is not does not have the capacity to handle as these numbers, these, I don't know, the capacity, not just the capacity, I don't know, the ability, the capacity. Granted, the numbers kept fluctuating, but I mean, for example, health, primary health care should be the responsibility of the government to be provided in the camps. But we had so many medical NGOs there helping out because there was no capacity. So I mean, it's a problem that is known. It's not I don't think anybody is surprised by it, the dysfunctionality of these camps in Greece and elsewhere, not just in Greece. But it's not a problem that is Greece's alone. It's the fact that it is a hotspot. It's people are arriving at that hotspot by the thousands. And yeah, and you can't just basically expect funding to resolve the whole thing. It's not, we need to come up with something beyond Dublin, something that's more fair and just to all the parties involved.
Since we're talking about this, I know this maybe has got nothing to do with your book as much, but it's still one of the top things I've been in my head. I think could be maybe not in the book, but what's your views? This is personal, maybe. What's your views about the Rwandan police, like the refugees to be moved to be sent to Rwanda?
Sorry, you froze for a moment, but I think your question was about Rwanda, correct?
Yes. What's your views on those policies?
Oh, yeah, very, very much against. I've been written to my MP several times saying that this is unacceptable, and my MP is actually quite against it himself. It's wholly racist. It targets a specific group of people who are crossing the channel while having another policy towards other asylum seekers and refugees and acting as if there is no discrimination here, but there is. It's a very blatant racist policy that is not, it's not going to work. It's not working. People are still crossing the channel, and it's just inhumane in every respect. And a lot of people, a lot of NGOs, MPs know this. I don't see it lasting very long, hopefully, because it is so widely criticized, and it's just, I don't think it can stand something like this.
I totally agree with you because yeah, I'm also like thought this is rubbish because it doesn't make sense at all. But never mind that. But I'm sure maybe the next book, not this book, the next one, maybe you write some more stuff about these refugees camps around the world, and it'd be great. For me, yeah, I think if you got any something for the last minute you want to say about this launch of the book, what would be that people should be really looking forward to come to your book launch.
Yeah, I would love everybody to come to the book launch on the 30th. So we're gonna do the provisional plan is I'll do a reading. We'll have a brief panel interview. We'll have some members of the publishing team there as well, and we'll have a Q&A, and we don't need to stick to the book. You can ask me anything you want about. I don't proclaim to be an expert on Moria Camp, but I was there for a couple of years, so if there's anything people want to know, I'll be there on the 30th.
Okay, thank you.